I even have been lucky enough to be designing some apps for the Apple Vision Pro, which is not released in Australia and New Zealand. So really exciting for us to be working on that. And the interactions on that platform are completely unique again.
Welcome back to Exceto Playback, the podcast discussing industry news, trends, and tech advancements in the OTT and streaming industry. Today, we are speaking to two industry pros about a topic near and dear to our hearts here at Exceto, design. More specifically, OTT design. And with us today, we have Nikki Perugini, our head of product design and advisory for Asia Pacific. Nikki, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. And with us today as well is Sonia LaFontaine, one of the senior designers here in North America. Sonia, how are you?
I'm good, you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. So let's just hop right into it. Sonia, what is UX and design in the realm of OTT?
Designing for OTT requires quite a background. You need to know a lot about all of the different platform requirements, the different devices, and how the navigation is for each. You need to be super familiar with the design guidelines, because this is like super important to create a familiar sense when users go from app to app. I can give you an example. Like on Xbox, when you go from an app to another, you often notice at the bottom that it will give you those shortcuts. You can press A to select, B for back. And that creates that familiar experience I was saying. So apart from that, there's also accessibility, which is such a big subject and very important and dear to my heart that we include everybody and that we make it easy for them. The other day I was testing an app and the movie detail page, which is such a crucial page on OTT design, required 10 swipe on VoiceOver to get from landing on the page to the play button. I can only empathize with those users that needs to play to swipe 10 times to get to play. So yeah, for me, that is not unacceptable. Designing for OTT is also about organizing the content to maximize discoverability. We want users to find the content that they are looking for. And to do so, we organize content, we put it forward, we segment it in different types of swim lanes. We sometimes have this carousel that highlights the latest shows. We also display it in search results. Sometimes you have no results, in those cases, we can just provide the suggestions. Any way that you can have content related to your search or related to what you're looking for or your profile is always great. Designing for OTT is also about personalization, like trying to find ways to make it like so close to you. Something like Sonia's watch list or recommended for you, or you like this, you might like this, or something like the percentage match to your profile. Those are great ways to make you feel like we organize this app just for you. In terms of features, clients are welcome to come to us with all of their features, but we tend to see similar ones come back. We work a lot on homepages, on EPG guide, mini EPG, search, profiles, shows page, but also we work a lot on the player, of course. Yeah, I don't need to mention, right, how important it is to the player in a video app experience, right? It has to be super intuitive. The main CTAs are easily accessible. The submenus are also very easy to find. The using skip sometimes resume the playback right away. Sometimes it doesn't. What should it be? On fast forward, when I release the fast forward, should it stop? Should it continue? That's it. Like those are all questions we ask, and we find the right answers and the right experience for the users. So all in all, to design an OTT app requires a lot of knowledge about the different platform requirements, the design guidelines, the best practices in terms of accessibility, in terms of design in general. So, there's a lot of that goes into play for designing an OTT app.
Yeah, design is needed in all aspects of an OTT application. Nikki, at a high level, what are the general steps to designing a user experience?
Yeah, good question. For me, I would say that the UX of OTT service especially, and I guess UX as a whole, there's some core fundamentals that we consider before we even start designing interface. And for what we kind of go through with our customers across the globe, and this process is pretty similar in all kind of design agencies, we have four kind of pillars, which I like to call them. They are UX strategy, UX user research, and then product design and data strategy. And in my opinion, it takes success in all four of those pillars in order to make a really well-designed and a rounded user experience. So if we talk about what UX strategy is, that really is combining the strengths of the user experience, the product, the technology, and the business goals. And so it's really important to consider, particularly when we're designing a great user experience, does it actually meet the business goals? Does it meet the needs of the product? What does the business actually need? Can it be supported on the technology that we have? And then how do we build that using those kind of limitations to create a really great user experience? So that all comes down to having a strong UX strategy. How we kind of do that with our customers, we start with really understanding what their goals are. We start to go through workshops. We run some discovery sessions with them. We might do some research with the audience, real audience that they have, any data that they have, we'll measure that. And we really kind of build initially a roadmap or a guide, which we like to call our UX strategy. And that can start from feature brainstorming. We can do prioritization. We'll build out a roadmap and we'll help to really define what the product roadmap should look like. So that's really the core basis of where a great product design starts, in my opinion. Of course, that's backed by a lot of research and data. That's something that we are really super passionate about at Aceto. User research can take so many different forms. So we might start by, collecting direct customer feedback. We might do interviews with customers. We might test the product in the market, the existing product if there is one. Understand all those pain points from existing users, and also understanding pain points from the business and the product goals. What kind of KPIs or metrics are they not hitting? What are the things that are really important to the business moving forward? And so collecting all this is all part of our kind of user research phase. And then, of course, that turns into building a great data strategy. So when we talk about the importance of a data strategy, it is really identifying what those key KPIs or metrics are that we need to hit in order for this product to be successful. And that can be, again, in those same kind of pillars. It can be a technological KPI, it could be a business KPI, or it could be a user need. And so having that kind of data strategy underneath any of the design, before you even start really creating any screens or designing any of the interface, having those fundamental foundations and understanding of how to build a product is really, I think, what drives success in the market. So, of course, on top of that, once you kind of have that great understanding of research, of strategy, you have a UX strategy and a data strategy, then you can really dive into the product design. And, of course, that's the space where we all love to be. That's the kind of creativity that we start to develop, looking at what kind of features would be great in this scenario, what the users really want, how do we improve particular flows or journeys to make that easier, and tying that all back into how does doing those features, how does making those flows successful drive those KPIs? Did that answer your question?
More than answered it. It also put into perspective just how much planning and other sort of user data is used to determine what is best for a user experience. It's not just starting to design, it's the pre-meetings and all the focus planning that really goes into it. So there's a lot of thought. Kind of talking on that sort of thought process a little bit more, how does the feedback loop between a customer and their design team but work with our sort of focus testing?
So when we speak about getting feedback and driving that, using that feedback to drive our product design strategy, it's really important that we understand what our customers really are looking for. And again, that comes back to really building out a good understanding of their business goals. And that makes driving these conversations around feedback a lot easier. You know, as a designer, we're constantly looking for data to back up the decisions that we've made. And so for us, if we're suggesting something, we're not just suggesting it because we think it looks nice or we think that I think that it looks good. It's absolutely not that. It's really that we have designed a lot of products like this in the past. We understand what kind of features work. We understand what could hit those KPIs, but also we like to back that up with research. So as many times as we possibly can, we like to test a new feature with customers, whether that be through A/B testing or some user testing. That gives us that data to back up and say, this version of the design that we've created is 10% more successful, 20% more successful than the other version or than what is in the market right now. And so that really drives this kind of collaborative, data-driven discussion with our customers. And it makes it really easy to give feedback and receive feedback because it's not personal, you know. It has nothing to do with the kind of design that I've created or that my team's created. It's got everything to do with the way that the customers are interacting with it. And I think having that kind of mindset really encourages the customer, our customers, our clients, to think about the way that they make decisions. And oftentimes it can be really hard to kind of separate your own personal opinion and think objectively about the product. And so doing that research, backing up that kind of design decisions with data is what I would really encourage all kind of OTT services and video content providers to have in the back of their mind.
Moving over a little bit to just general considerations with design. Now, when you think about obviously designing for OTT, that means a lot of different platforms, and platforms vary with a lot of different things. Like even between certain 10-foot platforms like Apple TV and Roku, you have to consider different things. Sonia, what sort of considerations need to be made across the different form factors? So that's mobile, tablet, desktop, and 10-foot as well.
Sure. One main consideration is what's the remote? What's the device like? What's the input? On the web, we could navigate with a mouse, with the keyboard. On TV, there's a pointer. There's a traditional remote with up, down, left, right, with back. But there's also joystick, like for Xbox. There's those type of device. So that's for sure. I guess just general best practice. If we're talking about web, we're going to look at W3C, look at the recommendation there, the best practices. When it comes to accessibility, we look at the WCAG and everything they suggest that we need to follow. And when it comes to different platforms, we follow their guidelines. For example, Apple, tvOS, iOS, we follow what's written on their website. So yeah, it's really about combining our knowledge of UX and following the guidelines to provide a good experience.
Nikki, anything else to add?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'd just like to echo what Sonia said and explain a little bit why we do have unique kind of design principles and guidelines for each platform. It's really easy for us in the tech world to expect that users will be familiar with every single platform. We use them every day. We know the difference between a TV with a universal remote or one with, you know, an Apple TV with a really simple remote. We're familiar with it, but our customers are not always. And I think it's really important to keep in the back of your mind that the reason that we design these unique experiences for each platform is so that it feels comfortable and familiar to actually interact with all of the apps on that platform. So if you think about the way that a particular hardware might treat their menu items, for example, navigation is a really good example of this. It's really different across lots of different platforms. A mobile device, especially iOS, you're very familiar with the bottom navigation. And we try to kind of use those familiar interactions in the applications that we do design so that it feels like the app belongs on that platform. Mm-hmm. And that goes super, super wide, right? You can think about that on all types of platforms, on TV. I even have been lucky enough to be designing some apps for the Apple Vision Pro, which is not released in Australia and New Zealand. So really exciting for us to be working on that. And the interactions on that platform are completely unique again. You know, you're selecting things by using your eye, focusing on something and tapping your fingers together. Totally unique interactions. And that really does impact the way that we make design decisions. Just small things around how easy is it to look at an item, to select it, you know, giving something a bounding box in order to actually be able to focus on it. Little elements of this really do impact the way that an application feels on different platforms.
Yeah, and we follow those regulations, and sometimes we do extensive research to see how one behaves on multiple devices. At one point, I did an analysis of the back button, and you know, sometimes it can, you can just do back and it exits the app. Sometimes it leaves it in standby. And sometimes when you do back, it actually goes all the way to home and goes back to the previous page. So this way you don't exit the app. So looking at the platform regulation just for that example, and seeing if there is a way that we don't drop off with the actual back is something really important.
Yeah, I believe it's Android TV and LG both have specific requirements around the back button on a remote, if I'm not mistaken. One more platform question. I'm curious about web. Obviously, web is a really complex thing because it has many different form factors if you're going for responsive. And just what things do you even need to think about when you are designing for web? I'll go to both of you. So Sonia first, and then we'll pivot over.
Yeah. So the there's various things that comes to mind. Navigation is different. There's the input fields, all of the little things, all of the little icons, the switcher, ticker box, all those things. And when it comes to accessibility, there's all the TTS, how you go from one thing to another, adding those arrows so that people can navigate, the keyboard navigation. Just lately, I've been working on a project for that. And we also have to design all of our swim lane, all of our components the other way, right to left, because there's other parts of the world where the navigation is the other way.
Interesting. Yeah. So obviously, there's not just accessibility. You have to take geolocation into consideration as well. Nikki, mm-hmm. Anything to add?
Yeah, I think it's a really great question. For me, web is one of the most difficult platforms to design for, in my opinion. I think when we think about UX design, something like a TV screen has a fixed ratio. You know, it has a fixed size. It's always going to be, or you can kind of guess what it's going to be on most screens. And so web is totally different from that. You know, we have responsive web design, which means that we need to consider what the frame will look like at any size or proportion. And so that makes designing really quite difficult for this kind of platform. One of the things that becomes really important in web design is modular design. And I think that from working with developers over a long period of time, it's so important to understand the way that they actually build a website as well. So really understanding all of the breakpoints, understanding the way that it would appear on a mobile device, because of course we have browsers on mobile devices as well. It's not just on a laptop, and really building out those kind of restrictions for the breakpoints. And something to keep in mind as well is the maximum widths and the minimum widths. So really thinking about how do we design an experience where if someone decides to blow up this browser on a huge screen, that it doesn't break everything. So modular design is a really important part of that. Building components and designing components that kind of sit together in an experience on a web page, that can really help in the responsive design, because it means that you can kind of order modules around once the window is changing size or ratio. And another element, we touched on accessibility. I think this is one of the biggest pieces. Understanding that there are a lot of different types of people using websites, really knowing that there's a number of people that use kind of website readers. If they have vision impairment, they are using lots of different types of input methods. All, you know, keyboards are very different, mouse are very different. And so thinking about the way that a wide group of people are going to interact with this platform is important. So again, you know, when we're going through the development process, working with the developers to give everything the correct tagging, to really try and break the product while we go through that design process. I think in web in particular, it's so important to collaborate with the development team during the process of design. There's a lot of things that we just can't even imagine are going to happen until we start building it and we see it happening. And so particularly for web, I think that collaboration in the development process is key to making that successful, even more so than any other platform. You know, I know that we say this about every platform, but web in particular, it can be super complex.
You mentioned there's a lot of extra considerations on web here, whether it's the different form factor or the accessibility. What are other common pitfalls across different platforms that you know of or you want to kind of highlight?
Yeah, I think we design for so many different platforms, right? We have a lot of experience in various different platforms across the market. One particular thing that comes to mind for me is especially around set-top boxes. You know, that kind of set-top box experience, it's not going anywhere. We see this cycle of pay TV operators having their own set-top boxes, moving into that more kind of digital app space and then back to set-top boxes. So I think there's always going to be this kind of hardware device element of big screen viewing especially. And those set-top box devices do not always have the same capabilities. And I think that's really important for us to know from a designer's perspective, because some of these set-top boxes, they can't display huge images with large gradients that make the design look kind of beautiful and slick as we would do on an Apple TV, for example. Understanding those requirements on those particular boxes does become really important for designers, right? So we don't want to provide our development team beautiful designs that just can't be implemented. Things like blurred backgrounds, like auto kind of large transitions between big pages, that can't always be supported on lower performing boxes. So for us, it's really important to understand what are the performance requirements of each of those platforms we are actually designing for, and to test them, you know, come up with different ways of compressing files or handling larger gradients, finding workarounds for that. It's really problem solving during that design process and in partnership with the development team. So particularly for those lower powered devices, I think having a really strong understanding of that from a design perspective will help you to build the best experience.
Very cool. Sonia, I know you have some experience with Android TV Launcher. I saw you agreeing quite thoroughly there. Do you have anything else you'd like to share?
One thing that was a major to consider on our Android TV, but I think we did mention it, is the remote. There's several buttons. Even my daughter, who's turning 9, was like, what are those buttons? Like, never seen 1 to 9, you know, buttons on the remote. So those things had to really be considered for every page. What button can you press? What button can you not press? Because sometimes they're disabled, enabled. And that whole remote experience or like tracking every action for each button on every page was something really big to analyze and to provide to the developers so they build the right experience.
Fascinating. This one's just for fun. Sonia, what's your favorite portion of OTT design?
I really like to do research and see how others are doing it and find out new ways or like how they keep improving. Because you think like there's no way we can make it better, but there's always a way. So every time there's a thing, something that's new on a product, on one of those key main providers, I love to see those things come out. And just like the Vision Pro too now, that like is a huge new device and new experiences. I just want to jump in and learn.
Nikki, what about yourself?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think, you know, it's not unique to OTT, but for me, the best part of UX design is just constantly solving problems. It's, you know, there's always something different, as Sonia said. There's always things that are changing, guidelines or platforms, new technology, new features and functionality. And I think having a really holistic understanding of all of those things builds that kind of character of problem solving. And it really helps you to be less, what's the word I'm looking for? less... Okay, so
that's personally invested. I don't know. Or
So as a problem solver, I think that you get less personally invested in what you're delivering in your own work, and you start to think more about the holistic experience and how you can make things better. You can be a lot less critical about yourself and just start to think about how to actually solve those problems.
Very cool. We've talked a little bit about emerging trends and emerging devices with the Apple Vision Pro and how you've had to reevaluate how certain things are considered in design. How can automation, another new topic, play into your role?
Really great question. I think that the emergence of AI especially is driving this kind of conversation around automation and improving operational tasks in design especially. So I know that we've been thinking about this from a development perspective for probably a little longer, but it's really interesting to start to think about how, as designers, can we optimize our processes to use automation and to use AI to actually help us to make this process quicker, more seamless, and focus more time on, as you said, solving problems for these new platforms and being more creative rather than spending a lot of time in the details in that process day to day. One of the initiatives that we have started at Aceto is building out design system with design tokens. And so this might be something that's kind of new for some people. It is a trend that's starting to pick up, particularly in the design space. But what it allows is it allows designers to actually push minor UI changes to the development team from Figma. And so it kind of starts to blur the lines between where design and development can collaborate. And it starts to really put more onus on the designers to be part of the final process of delivering an application. And this particularly, you know, we found that this kind of automation really helps because a lot of times we're going back and forth with development teams, pointing out little UI changes or fixes or things that aren't quite aligned with the designs that we delivered. And as a designer, it's really important to have those small, you know, 1% changes be reflected in the application because that's what really does impact the overall look and feel and usage of the app. And so as sometimes, you know, working with development teams, there's a lot of other priorities. Those little 1% UI fixes are not always on the top of the priority list when we're working in tight timelines and we have huge features that we need to deliver. And so automating this kind of part of the workflow is a really great way for us to start to implement a higher quality design because we're pushing these changes directly from Figma and also to have more ownership over the final product as the designers. So I think the automation, particularly in this space around tokens and design systems, is something that's going to continue to really grow over the coming months and years. Figma is building in some native features around this already. We've done some exploration with our internal teams and we're going to try and implement it in a couple of projects coming up soon. So it'll be really interesting to see how this develops, how much optimization we can get throughout this process, and how that kind of changes the design workflow and process as well. It's an exciting time, an exciting space to be in because, you know, as designers, we just want the best end product as possible. And so giving us more opportunity to really input that is such a exciting kind of thing for me, especially. And so, I can only see this space growing as well. If we talk about trends in the future, I think there's going to be a lot more in terms of, you know, we have really powerful tools now for design. Figma is such a powerful tool. There's so many things that we can build on top of Figma, plugins, and particularly with tokens. So I think that this is going to just continue to expand.
I'm so glad that you mentioned design tokens. I had it underlined here. Make sure that we talk about this a little bit, just because it's so interesting. And for those of you unaware, as she mentioned, Figma has this ability to basically publish designs that are made on the Figma site or the Figma app live to applications. So if you have a web app, that could be published live to your existing application. It's an incredible feature. And like you said, it really just enhances the workflow between design and engineering, which is obviously a hyper important feature. That's really cool. Well, I would love to keep talking because this has been a lot of fun and really insightful, but I think we are getting close to time, and I'm sure you've also got to get started on a few things. Thank you so much, Nikki. Sonia, thank you so much for your time.
No problem. It's been great to be here. I could honestly talk all day about design. I could talk underwater. So I'd love to be back anytime. Thanks so much for having me. It's been great. Appreciate it, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Thank you to both Sonia and Nikki for joining us today. It was a great conversation. Really appreciated. If you have any questions about the episode or you'd like to reach out, feel free to send me a message on LinkedIn or send us an email at playback.podcast@axedo.tv. That's all. We'll see you next time.